Hello and welcome to Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. I'm your host, Rob Davidson, and I'm joined today by Kevin Edwards, our Global Strategy Director. Hi, Kev.
Hi, Rob.
And co-hosting with us today is Rachel Tyra, Head of Account Management for Awin US. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So you're based out in our offices in Baltimore. So how is life out there at the moment?
It's good. I hear you have a fun fact that you wanted to share with me.
I did. Well, I mean, usually anybody I speak to from Baltimore, which is mainly colleagues from Awin, is the natural question is to ask them, you know, about The Wire and who their favorite character from The Wire is. I take it you've watched The Wire, having lived in Baltimore for so long.
I've never seen The Wire.
Wow.
is that a conversation ender?
It is for that particular conversation, yeah. I was scrolling Reddit earlier this week and I follow a subreddit called Today I Learned. And the subreddit fact for Baltimore that I came across was that the city of Baltimore used flogging as a punishment till 1938. People were sent to the whipping post for one crime only, which was wife beating. Now, this punishment was used because wife beaters often escaped conviction as their wives simply couldn't afford to send the husband / breadwinner to jail. So, a couple of questions for you. Do you know of this whipping post at all?
I don't, but I'm really curious.
Is it a famous landmark?
No, I don't think it's that famous.
Okay. Because there was a user I noticed underneath in this particular subreddit who JMZX0, serious question, which usually means it's not, would you take, say, 20 lashes over 5 years in prison? And he followed up with that, since we have antibiotics today, I think I would. What would you say, Rachel?
That's a tough question. I think I would definitely take the 20 lashes.
Okay.
I don't think I'd fare well in prison.
I mean, definitely.
Kev definitely wouldn't fare well in prison.
Not with that pretty face.
I'll answer for you. I do think if you know the location of this poll, I would like to visit this weekend.
Yeah,
and I'll send you a picture.
That would be great, actually. Oh, yeah. And maybe we will get the Twitter account at Awin to share that as well. Anyway, moving on from Baltimore chat, on today's episode, as we're in the midst of Q4 and the peak shopping period, we're discussing some of the early signs of how consumers are behaving in the run-up to Black Friday. I'll also shortly be talking to Michelle O'Sullivan, our Global Customer Success Director for Awin Access, which is our solution for small businesses and startups. She'll be talking about how Awin Access has been faring this year and also to tell us a bit more about a recent digital marketing guide that they've just published as well. Right now, though, we're actually recording this chat the day after Singles Day, so we're just beginning to get a bit of a sense of how big the Chinese sales extravaganza was. And once again, it's looking like a fairly monumental day of shopping. It's pretty much outstripped Black Friday for the last few years, I think, in terms of the sales revenue that's happened. Rachel, you've been having a few kind of looks at the data from Awin's perspective as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been looking at it across some of our US partners. I think not a massive change in performance year over year, but I don't want to speak too soon. I don't think we've really dug enough into the data, but definitely I think one sporting advertiser in particular saw actually double growth year over year. So that was pretty impressive to see. And I think one thing to flag from our side is the change in the publisher mix. We're seeing a lot more performance from buy now, pay later, and then also influencer and social networks, whereas last year it was heavily driven by discount and cashback.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, overall, the results for this year's Singles Day, because it's generally the results that are quoted in the media tend to come from Alibaba, which is the biggest platform for retail. They've got various different platforms that they use, but they essentially help to kind of promote and publicize the event and make it into the massive retail event that it now is. And they did see an increase on last year's record results from 2020. So At the moment, the tracked revenue on the day was around about $85 billion, which was up on the $78 billion they saw in 2020. But it wasn't quite as much of a boost as maybe they were expecting, Kev, was it?
I think the market actually outstripped it, because obviously this was a predominantly Alibaba event and has been for many years. But now obviously it's sort of permeated out into the wider e-commerce world in China. And I think that whilst 8.5% growth is impressive, I think comparatively it's sort of underperformed compared to sort of general e-commerce growth. You know, Alibaba this year has seen kind of its market valuation drop as well. So I guess it was trying to sort of stamp its authority back on the market again. So I'm not kind of sure how the market's going to respond to that. I think that the sales grew 26% last year, so the growth dropping by two thirds. I read there were a couple of other things that I read specifically about this year's events. They were trying to be a lot more kind of, there's a much greater focus on sustainability. So they apparently highlighted the use of renewable energy in their data centers, and they kind of flagged that they were reducing carbon emissions as well. I guess that, you know, that's still against the backdrop of the fact that it is a hugely consumer orientated event.
Yeah, there's some contradictions there, I think. Yeah, it's quite interesting to see how they've looked to incorporate that element into the day. And I think that that's something that we'll probably start to see a little bit more in Black Friday as well, later in the month. But I mean, in terms of single day's actual evolution in recent years, I think one of the similarities with Black Friday has been the sense that it's started to kind of bleed out or dilute away from just being a 24-hour phenomenon into kind of earlier weeks and days ahead of the event, where more and more offers are going live earlier and earlier. And actually, in the lead up to this year's Singles Day event, we did see some pretty extraordinary activity happening via live shopping platforms in China. Most famously, I don't know if you've heard about this guy, there was a live streaming influencer called the Lipstick King, who sold around $1.7 billion worth of goods via his live shopping show on the Taobao platform, which is one of the Alibaba platforms. And he was promoting a huge variety of different beauty products, primarily to his audience. And in fact, interestingly, it was health and beauty that performed particularly well at Awin as a sector or a subsector, generating the most traffic, revenue and publisher commissions on the network. But what do you guys make of this live shopping phenomenon? Do you think this is something that's going to break out and break out into the West? Because it's taken off in the last few years in China in a big way. And there's a lot of talk about how many of the big social giants are keen to encourage its adoption for users here. YouTube are actually launching their own large-scale test of this type of activity on their platform, I think the week that this podcast goes out, and they're also allowing creators on there to try this format with their followers. And Amazon Live have been doing something similar since, I think, the last few years, since about 2016. But they're also starting to invest a lot more in it and trying to encourage more influencers onto their platform. So is it something that you consider doing? Do you think it'll make the shift over to the West?
I think this could actually be growing. I mean, there's obviously the opportunity to do this across different platforms. And I think last time I was actually on the podcast, we talked about the growth of influencers. And I think adding in the element of live stream shopping, you're combining entertainment with the fact that you can see a real-time product demo. There's real-time feedback. And I think it kind of increases the intent to purchase. And you're already hitting your target audience. You know your audience is interested and trusts you. So I can actually see this being really successful for health, beauty, also retail. I think it could genuinely be a pretty big trend next year.
Yeah, I mean, there's I was doing a bit of research on this, and McKinsey produced a report last year, and actually they tracked how in the space of 3 years from 2017 to 2020, the revenue tracked through live streaming in China had gone up from $3 billion to $171 billion across the course of 3 years. So clearly huge, rapid growth. I think they also, they surveyed Chinese consumers as well and said that two thirds of them had bought products by live streaming in the previous 12 months as well. So it's clearly fully established and embedded with their e-commerce landscape there. They also said that they anticipate within the next 5 years that it will account for 10% of all e-commerce globally. So clearly there is a lot of growth there. I think that it's still quite nascent. I think we still don't really know much about it. There are some, as you say, there are some tentative first steps in the West. I think there's a couple of Awin clients that have started using a couple of the newer platforms that have emerged. But beyond that, it's definitely going to be one that you feel that there's a lot of opportunity, and it's a question of brands having the vision and the kind of, I suppose, the ambition to want to do it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that's going to be tailored and targeted towards a younger audience that is more open to embracing these types of interactive video, maybe, and who are already maybe on Twitch and they're kind of following gamers and watching them kind of play games, or perhaps they're kind of watching YouTubers do some live streaming already, etc. And so you can even see this, I think, in other platforms like Omegle or even OnlyFans, if you want to go down that particular route. Like there's an element of that you kind of, like, you know, that live streaming, watching, interacting, etc. element that does seem to be increasing, I would say, in terms of its usage and adoption by individuals at the moment. And shopping, I guess, fits quite neatly into that. But it still has I don't know, for me personally, like, I can't think of anything more boring than watching people kind of promote products to me. And
you just said you watched QVC this morning. I
did. That was because it was 4 a.m. My daughter wouldn't go to sleep and there was nothing else.
Right, but that's the point. So everyone is already on their phone, bored, scrolling through like Instagram and TikTok. And so they're going to end up watching these live streams.
It's inevitable.
And also everybody's working from home as well. So nobody's speaking to anybody. So they need the interactivity. So they want to go and buy from their influencers.
Yeah, friends. Yeah. How many influencer friends do you have, Kev?
Oh, it's got to be it's like definitely in three figures now.
All the influencers do. I hear all the influencers hang out at pub quiz nights.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, looking forward to Black Friday, there's so many different factors that are going to have an influence on how the day performs and whether or not customers go for it in a big way or not. What are your thoughts around that? What are the factors that you think might dictate how it performs? Because last year, just to give you some context, we tracked close to $300 million in revenue on the day, and that worked out to be around 100,000 sales every hour on average. And last year was actually the first time that we tracked 50% of sales via smartphone, which was a pretty seismic shift in consumer behavior away from desktop, which had obviously dominated for so many years historically. But yeah, how do you think it's going to land this year?
Well, I mean, I guess people do tend to be fixated on Black Friday specifically that day, but obviously a trend that we've seen for the past few years is that has becoming earlier and earlier in the month. So, you know, we know now that the whole of November is very much a discounting month. And it's quite interesting looking at some of the headlines from trade press, which are kind of quite pessimistic about this year and Black Friday. They're talking, you know, there was a headline in Retail Week which sort of indicated that Black Friday was going to struggle. And actually, all it is displacement. You know, those sales are just coming earlier and earlier. We've already seen good uplift in terms of revenue and commissions for the first sort of 7 days of the month. We're going to be tracking it, obviously, ongoing, and we're going to be looking at the numbers. I think also Retail Week published some numbers to show that more retailers are going into sale earlier and earlier. And again, that's just a trend that is continuing, that has been continuing for the past couple of years. One thing that will be interesting this year is whether that kind of leads to fatigue on the day, because I think that we've seen lower growth specifically around Cyber Weekend year on year compared to other parts of the month. There's an agency who released some data saying that they anticipate that fewer people are actually going to shop on Black Friday itself this year. And that clearly doesn't mean that those people aren't going to buy stuff, but it just means that they might buy it elsewhere at other times in the month.
And what about from a US perspective, Rach?
I think in reading a couple of different things recently, eMarketer was actually predicting that Black Friday might see more of a return to in-store shopping. So last year, there were a lot of, obviously, limitations to in-store shopping or even just general store closures on Black Friday. So we naturally saw more people shopping online, but traditionally in the US, Black Friday was in store. And I think we'll see a return to that. And then kind of one other thing that is interesting is on Thanksgiving itself, there's going to be a lot of big retailers are already announcing store closures. So the likes of Walmart, Best Buy, Target, typically opened on Thanksgiving for kind of like doorbuster deals. And this year, that's not going to be the case. They're closed on Thursday. So I think we might see a larger growth in online shopping actually on taking place on Thursday, Thanksgiving. So,
I mean, one other point as well is the stock shortages that we're seeing just generally across the board in different countries. That survey that I mentioned also asked shoppers about whether that will impact how they shop, and half of them said that it would probably compel them to shop earlier in the month. So that could be literally playing out now. You know, that could be coming through in the numbers that we're seeing coming through the network at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different factors with those supply chain issues as well, because you've got a combination of a lack of workers, in part thanks to the so-called Great Resignation that has kind of broken out from just being a US-based phenomenon out into Europe, definitely. I don't know about kind of other regions around the world, but that's definitely impacted a lot of businesses. It's disrupted their ability to hire workers, deliver the goods that their customers are kind of buying on time for them. You've also got the global crisis in superconductors, which is affecting the availability of any product reliant upon computer chips, which in this day and age extends way beyond just laptops and smartphones right now. In fact, I was reading that one of the worst hit sectors for that, this isn't necessarily kind of a Black Friday kind of focused product necessarily, but the auto industry, the likes of Ford and GM, for instance, have got limited production because of their inability to ship these superconductors that they need when they're building their cars. But and like you say, Kev, that desire for shoppers to ensure that the gifts they buy arrive in time for Christmas is perhaps going to lead more shoppers to kind of look for those deals earlier and earlier because they're being made available earlier as well. So we may even see an uptick from an AWIN perspective. One of the interesting trends I'd be interested to look into would be to see whether or not we see a rise in people buying maybe digital gifts and vouchers as an alternative to physical goods, knowing that they've got that reassurance that when they buy something as a gift, then that, you know, it's going to be delivered and they're not going to have to overcome that hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, thinking also about specifically what's going to happen from an affiliate perspective, it'll be interesting to see if some of the sectors that sort of struggled a little bit during the pandemic, because even, you know, health and beauty was one of those sectors that was quite negatively impacted online generally. And it'd be interesting to see whether that bounces back this Black Friday. As ever, you know, electricals will probably be the star of the show, but typically also one of the things that people don't necessarily consider is that there is definitely a halo effect way beyond gifting and those sort of traditional retail segments. So we always see traffic surges across the board and across all categories. Even if you're not as a retailer, you're not participating in any discounting or promotions. And so I think people are probably quite shopping focused. They're probably in sort of full buying mode. And that means that kind of benefits everybody, regardless of how engaged you are as a retailer with Black Friday or not.
Now, if you want to keep a closer eye on the trends that AWIN is tracking as far as the lead up to and the day itself of Black Friday, we do have a new tracker that has just launched, an interactive tracker that you can have a look at some of the trends that we're witnessing currently from across all of our global regions. Where can people find that, Kev?
So it's not currently live yet, but by the time this podcast is released, it should be live on our website. It is similar, if people remember, from the tracker that we released last year during the pandemic. It's very similar to that. It's kind of an upgraded version of it. You can drill down, as you say, look at the daily performance of sales, but you can also drill down into sectors and by market, and you can compare data against the last 2 years as well. And that should be available on our corporate website.
Well, we'll include a link to that tracker in the description for this particular episode on the blog. But yeah, we'll be looking forward to Black Friday. But now on to my conversation with Michelle about AWIN Access. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm getting over a cold, so I might be slightly nasally.
We can see if we correct that in the post-production.
Thank you.
So I wanted to get you on today in part to ask you how Awin Access, our solution for micro SMEs and smaller startups and entrepreneurs, is performing at the moment. So could you give the audience a bit of an overview on that?
Yeah, I mean, long story short, it's just going so well. I think probably better than I ever imagined. At the moment, we have over 1,400 programs live across the UK and Europe. And given these figures are up to sort of, well, late October, we're already up 100% year on year. We probably have around 130 to 140 new advertisers launching with us every month, and every quarter we're just seeing this picking up as we do more promotion of Awin Access. Over the course of last year and this year, we had been pushing ahead with deploying Access into all of our markets, and now Access is available in 9 markets globally. So the only exception for Awin at the moment would be APAC. But yeah, just some really lovely performance that we're seeing across the programs. And on average, an advertiser has 54 active partners, and programs become sale active 46% in the first week and 83% in the first month. So it's all just going incredibly well. And yeah, we're just really excited about what's going to come for next year. And also, you know, picked up a couple of nice performance marketing awards along the way as well.
That's always nice, definitely.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting, actually, the whole international expansion of Access. And it's great to see there's obviously similar demand from other markets that you've seen originally in the UK, because it was really popular in the UK and it continues to be really popular.
Yes.
Are there any kind of like differences in the types of business that in other countries that are embracing it, or is it fairly consistent? Actually, you're seeing quite similar kind of organizations getting involved in the channel.
Yeah, I would say from the actual the advertiser perspective, it's fairly similar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are looking at around sort of 95% retail for online stores.
Yeah.
It's quite consistent across Europe and the US. You know, subsectors that are popular, I guess, would be as expected. So health and beauty, clothing, jewelry, home and garden, I'd say are probably our top four.
Yeah.
But then saying that, you know, I guess through COVID, you know, you get those little nuggets that appear that may not be part of big of the top subsectors, but also do very well. So sort of food subscription would be an example. Or, you know, it's always nice when we see advertisers that come to us that maybe have like one item that's quite innovative, or, you know, that tends to just fly and do really well.
Yeah.
And I guess historically, you know, we didn't have anywhere to sort of have a home for these advertisers to come, where we didn't think they would probably take off and they wouldn't want to pay higher price to join Awin. So yeah, it's been really interesting to see what can come into Access and sort of be incubated. And then, you know, as they grow, and they expand, they can grow with Awin through our other service tiers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really, really fascinating to see. Now, part and parcel of that process of trying to make it easier for these types of business to understand exactly what they can get out of the affiliate channel and partnerships is that you've published this new guide, which is really focused on small businesses. So mm-hmm. Could you tell us a bit about what that contains and how you've kind of laid that out?
Yeah, well, it's called Digital Marketing 101 for Small Businesses. And I'm not going to take credit. Kevin Edwards, Global Strategy Director, wrote the content. yeah, essentially what we wanted to do was provide a guide to advertisers that are really new to their online journey that walks them through the kind of common direct response marketing channels that are available to them. So the guide does explore, you know, social on Facebook and paid ads on Google. But then what we're trying to do is lead an advertiser at a sooner place to affiliate marketing and actually the advantages of working on a performance model. So it kind of, you know, it addresses all the things that we know are very common, but they're also the things that don't always work for a small business, you know, to fight through search space paid ads in retail for, you know, top trending items, it's going to be expensive. And often we find that an advertiser that comes to us says, oh, I really wish I'd done this sooner. So that's really what this guide is trying to say, is that, you know, this is an option for you. It's not complicated. You know, find out about affiliate marketing through this guide and our top tips and how we can walk you through sort of that practical guidance to get started. Also within the guide, what's really lovely is we've got a couple of our access brands talking about their experiences, and also a publisher, because on the flip side of having access for small businesses, we also attract obviously a lot more long tail publishers as well. So there's a nice case study from someone called Sustainably Lazy at the end as well, that I really recommend everyone has a read.
Yeah, that was a really interesting case study, actually, when I was kind of reading her story. She set up this blog, which essentially curates more ethical, sustainable lifestyle brands, if I'm correct. And she made this point, which I think was really key, was that, you know, when she was setting up or thinking about trying to set up some affiliate partnerships, the general recommendations on the web were, you know, go and join Amazon, go and join their associates program. It's really easy. You know, you've got access to all these products, etc. And she was instantly just thought, you know, that's not what I want to do. That's not what I'm about. I need a level of curation and a level of, you know, ability of controlling the organizations that I work with, that actually doing this myself through an affiliate network like or a solution like Awin Access really helps her to do.
Yeah. And you know what? She's just, it's an example of what I would classify as like a pure publisher, in the sense that she, you know, she was writing about something that she was passionate about. She didn't know anything about the affiliate marketing side and monetizing her content. And then over time, when she started to explore these items, these, you know, ethically sourced, produced items, she then recognized that there was networks that she could use these links. And then over time, she's explored Awin, and she's quite prevalent on a lot of those programs on Access, because obviously we have a lot of ethical and sustainable items on there. And she's built it over time to the point where, you know, she has a nice income out of it, but she didn't come into this as for it to be a money spinner. She was just passionate about what she believed in. And to me, that's the best kind of publisher you could ever have. And yeah, like I say, it's all in the guide, so it's really worth a read.
Yeah. And I guess that's a good example of why you decided to publish this guide now. Do you feel that there is still this real lack of information on affiliate marketing beyond the Amazon Associates program for small businesses at the moment?
Yeah, I think, you know, like I've come from a background where I've worked on big brands before. And I think a lot of the content and case studies that are out there are focused on the bigger brands. And whilst, of course, they have that nice sort of, I guess, halo effect around them, it also makes a small business feel like, but is that something that is obtainable for me? And I think it can be almost seen as a counter effect and a bit of a sort of a blocker to them, a bit of a barrier to entry. So I think we found that, you know, when we were looking for even some of the stuff that Awin have written in the past, you know, it's a lot of the language is used is language we would use internally, or, you know, where we would use acronyms. They're just things that small businesses that are brand new to affiliate marketing don't understand. And what we didn't want to do is have something that was going to put them off. So yeah, it's meant to be a resource that's accessible to anyone. So no matter what your background is or your level of understanding, you can digest this guide and be like, oh, okay, this is something that I could try. And it gives them the confidence to give it a go. And when I started Awin Access, one of the sort of guiding principles was that everything should be de-jargonized, which we've been following up on. And we maintain that now. And actually we're going a step further in that. All of our guides and webinars and assets are de-jargonized, but also we're trying to make them bite-sized as well. Because these small businesses are, you know, normally you're dealing with the founder that's doing everything for that business. They don't have the time to go in and out of all these different guides and assets. We try to give them snippets just to help them with one particular challenge that they're having at that point in time. And then they can come back if they want to then explore other things.
Now, you mentioned some of the other resources that you guys have created over the last few months. And what else is there beyond the guide that small businesses, agencies can find about Awin Access at the moment?
Yeah, so I guess we have our YouTube channel, which is open to everybody. And there are various tutorials on there that are quite specific tutorials around the use of our products and functionality. One thing in particular that an Awin Access advertiser gets when they launch with us is they get added to what we refer to as our email drip. And essentially, it's a sequence of emails that go out from the point of them being live. So congratulations, your program is now live. And it holds their hand over the first kind of 30 to 60 days of all of the things they should consider with their program, where they should be at by the first month, you know, guiding them on best practice, introducing new types of partners they might wish to consider. And we get a very strong open rate and engagement on these emails, because essentially, as AWID Access is a self-managed solution, the email drip almost acts as that remote account manager for them. So we've done a lot of work on our email drip, and there's going to be a lot more exciting stuff to come with that moving ahead. The other thing that we've developed specifically for new entrants is a small business webinar centre. So within that, there is a sort of deeper dive into types of publishers. And we also have, I guess you'd sort of call it talking heads, but we have examples of clients and their experiences of what they've gone through. So again, anyone that's sort of curious, I'd suggest going there. And there's a lovely interview I've done with Daniel High Street, and another one with the deodorant brand Wild that some people probably will be familiar with. And then more recently, which is not exclusively for Access clients, but we do have an Access specific section, is our Advertiser Success Centre. So within that, that is available externally and not just for existing advertisers. There's just a whole abundance of articles in there on all different topics. So yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways that they can go and learn about different aspects to grow in their program. And, you know, we welcome feedback from our clients, and we engage with them and interview them to see, you know, where are the gaps. And we're constantly, you know, optimizing those articles and looking at what more we can add.
Yeah, well, there's plenty to explore there. But
there's a lot.
But yeah, if listeners are interested in finding more out about AWID Access, and the guide is a great place to start. And what we'll do is we'll drop a link to where you can find and download that from the AWID site on the blog for this particular episode as well, so it's a bit easier to kind of find. But thanks for coming in today, Michelle.
No worries.
And we'll look forward to, obviously, it sounds like you've got a hell of a lot on your plate coming up for 2022. So I'm sure we'll get you back on very soon to find out more about how that's all going.
Yeah, I think it would be great. Some really exciting stuff coming up for next year. So I look forward to chatting to you again then.
Thanks to Michelle for that interview on AWID Access. Now, Rachel, part of the reason I wanted to get you on today is because you were recently attending Affiliate Summit West in Las Vegas. So how was it to be back in Sin City, meeting people in the flesh once again?
Yeah, I think we had a really quality show. Like you said, it was nice to be back in person and seeing some familiar faces. We definitely had a much higher attendance than we were anticipating. I think when we found out that ASW was falling in the first week of November, we had some doubts about attendance rates. But we saw a lot of attendance, specifically from publishers and agencies, which was really valuable for us. On the first day of summit, we actually had a agency breakfast. So we invited about 40 new and existing partners to join us, and we presented our agency solution. So highlighting how we support agencies, how we can work together, and gave them a teaser of kind of product roadmaps for AWID and ShareASale, which received some really good feedback. So I think that went really well. We've seen a lot of outreach off the back of that. And we got some really nice feedback from agencies who let us know that we have created a very niche support team for agencies specifically that they're not seeing with competitors. So that was nice to hear. And I think also kind of ties in nicely with the IPMA award that the team won last month.
Yeah, that was a really good accolade for them to pick up there, actually. Yeah, for any agencies listening into the podcast, actually, one of the things that I want to highlight, case studies are a real passion project, as far as passion projects go. I'm always really keen to try to find out more about the interesting campaigns and partnerships that are occurring across the global network, and to try to write about them, publicize them, and case studies are often the kind of best approach with that. If we have any agencies that are interested in talking about or having us publish campaigns, activity that they're coordinating with AWID clients through us, then in the Agency Resource Center, you can actually fill out our new case study Asana form. We just need a few details about the activity itself, And that then gets sent over to our marketing teams. They'll review it and we can kind of produce a case study in conjunction, in tandem with the agency itself. So we're really keen to hear about all the great activity that you guys are coordinating with AWIN. So do use that link if you can. Now, Kev, aside from the small business guide that Michelle was talking about earlier, that wasn't the only piece of content that AWIN has had a hand in publishing recently, is it? I've heard of this cross-industry tracking guide that you've collaborated on.
Yeah, so you can find this new guide at affiliatepartnertracking.com. And in essence, what it is it's an opportunity for us as an industry to communicate with the wider digital space about how robust affiliate marketing tracking is in general. So it's been quite a few months in the preparation and the making. AWIN collaborated with 7 competitors, other big networks and SaaS players in the market. And we all came together to produce a document and a set of FAQs. And really it had at the core, as I say, one, it was gave us the opportunity to talk about the robustness of affiliate tracking. 2, it gave us the ability to talk about how those solutions are future-proofed for brands who are maybe concerned about the kind of the challenges that browsers pose to them in terms of sort of, you know, the future of third-party cookies in particular, and about how the affiliate channel and all these companies have built solutions designed to address those issues. It also gave us, I think, the opportunity to kind of put a marker in the sand to talk about how affiliate is distinct from other channels as well, and so really it's a great starting point, I think, for any brands, agencies, and we, as I say, we collaborated with a handful of other networks who have also been pushing out the content. It's a pretty extensive guide. It won't take you ages to read it, but it talks generally through how the affiliate model works, how it's quite data light. And then it talks about how, if you are running an affiliate program, that you should contact your supplier to make sure that you're running tracking at an optimal level. So again, it's one of the other things that we hope will come from it is that brands will actually recognize that maybe they don't have the best or optimal tracking solution in place. And so that they can reach out to businesses like ours to double check that their tracking is as optimal as it can be. And then we can obviously work on upgrading them if we need to ensure that they are kind of future-proofed for the decline of third-party cookies in particular, which we're going to see specifically from Google in terms of Chrome from 2023 onwards.
Yeah, unless they postpone it again.
And yeah, so that URL, just one more time, is affiliatepartnertracking.com. And on that, as I say, you can download the guide from that. And there's also a set of FAQs as well.
Yeah, we'll include a link to that site where they can listeners can access that guide directly themselves. But that's all we have time for on this week's edition of AWIN Talks. Remember, if you like what you hear, then we would love for you to give us a review and rating on your podcast streaming platform of choice. Rachel, have you reviewed and rated AWIN Talks yet?
I haven't, but I will after this, and I'm sure you're going to have an influx of requests for me to return to the podcast regularly.
Definitely. How many stars will you be giving us?
5. Is that the max? Huge in the podcast game.
You need to come back. You need to come back soon to tell us about the flogging post.
Oh yeah,
that's true. Once you've been to prison and come back.
Once I get arrested,
getting back on.
Once I get arrested this weekend and I've checked out the poll, I'll take a picture and we'll recap. We should do a happy hour next time.
Yeah, definitely. In the meantime, we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with a full breakdown of how Black Friday fared across the network. It might be Black and Blue Friday for Rachel. as well as heaps of other great insight and content. I hope you'll join us then. For now, though, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Kev.
Bye.
Goodbye from Rachel.
And goodbye from me.